Support for this podcast and the following messages comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, proud to support the many Texas businesses who make safety their number one priority in the workplace. More information about safety-focused workers' comp available at WorkSafeTexas.com.
It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey guys, we are back. Thank you for tuning in here at Money for Lunch, or with us at Money for Lunch, or joining us at Money for Lunch. As always, we bring you the best stuff from around the country. I always like to tease everybody and just and jokingly say that when you spend time here at Money for Lunch, you're really having lunch with some of the best leaders around the world. We do have many international leaders, but we have leaders that join us from health and fitness, from marketing, from business, from sales, and today is no exception. My first guest is Therese Soler, and I hope I have that. I hope I get that correct. If not, she will certainly straighten me out in a second here. But let me tell you a little bit about our first guest. And I apologize, I'm having some blinking with my teleprompter. My teleprompter is the tool that I use to sound professional when I introduce a guest. Anyway, Therese Soler is an advanced practice nurse that works at Doctors Weight Loss and Wellness. She has been practicing medical weight loss for 3 years. Therese, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hi, Bert. Thank you for having me. How are you guys?
We are doing fantastic. Excited to have you on the show. I want to ask you this real quick. What is medical weight loss exactly?
Yeah, so medical weight loss is actually where medical professionals, whether they're doctors, nurses, advanced practice nurses, help to guide patients through their weight loss journey. So what sets us apart from just regular dietary counseling, physical activity counseling, is as a medical clinic, we are also allowed to write prescriptions that may be helpful in controlling a patient's appetite, helping to change their behaviors, and things of that nature.
Gotcha. All right, so let me ask you this. Is this something for everybody, or who qualifies for your program?
Yeah, so that's actually a very good question. Typically, anybody can qualify for dietary counseling. You'll be so surprised how many people come in and they have a misconception of kind of what is healthy eating. You know, they come in and they say, I'm eating very little, I'm not losing weight. So for those patients, dietary counseling is a must. It is a key. Everybody can qualify for that part. As far as qualifying for prescription medications, that's kind of a little bit more of the medical side of the clinic, where we have to do a complete physical history, medical history, and make sure that they're good candidates for prescription medications. They have to meet certain weight. They have to be a certain weight, a certain body fat percentage. And these are people who've typically tried various ways to lose weight and haven't had good success with those traditional methods.
Right. You know what? And what I like about what you guys are doing is it's not just necessarily putting somebody on medication. First, you're
right.
Looking at what they're eating. And that's so important because in today's marketplace, it's very confusing because, quote, all the foods that we eat tell you how healthy they are for you. Hey, it's enriched in vitamins. This is part of a nutritious breakfast. You know, you have to be a sick, twisted individual when you are serving frosted flakes to anybody and saying this is part of a nutritious breakfast.
How many of us grew up with that, right? Our parents, grandparents, they thought feeding you toast or giving you even flavored oatmeal, things like that for breakfast was really good for you. And so now we're kind of trying to create sort of a mini revolution in changing the way people think about what is healthy for them.
Yeah, you know what? And it has to be done. And unfortunately, we don't have, when I say we people who are healthy and know the truth about a lot of these foods, we don't have the billions of dollars that these massive businesses do to offset that mixed message out there. Because, you know, for the most part, if it's full of sugar, and today a lot of, quote, fat-free products are full of sugar, that's how they taste good. you know, it's just terrible for you. So if you think that you're eating very little, and most people probably are, but you're eating the wrong foods, and therefore you're still gaining weight.
Right. And so you're right. I like how you brought up the fact about money. Everything, you know, there's that motive for people to market and advertise certain foods as healthy. So it really starts as a grassroots movement for a lot of people, whether that is from practitioners, medical practitioners, or from friends who've had good success knowing how to eat a little bit better, and they pass it along to their friends. One of the things, though, that I'm noticing is as a medical community, very recently, within the year or so, the Academy of Pediatrics recently released No More Juice for Kids, that statement, just because they've known that it is linked to obesity. So there's definitely larger organizations who are kind of getting the hint and making efforts
right to
make it a message for everybody to hear.
Well, and again, and the reason why, and again, I'm not aware of this release, but I will definitely have my staff check it out. The reason, I'm sure, behind this release is because juice isn't the juice that it was 30 years ago. Today's juice is,
right,
again, combination of water and some flavoring and some sugar additives or whatever, and it's horrible. And you see these five-year-old kids who are already obese and you know, borderline diabetic. But let's talk about this. Speaking of age, let's talk about managing our weight as we age. Unfortunately, it seems to be true, and I'd like to get your take on it. Is it harder for us to lose weight as we get older, because we're having all these different changes in our body? What's going on?
Absolutely. So that's actually a very good question. A large population of our patients are people over 40, whether they be males or females. And the thing that really runs across the board for them is the hormonal changes as they age. As we age, we just don't process sugar the same way anymore, right? So maybe in your 20s or early 30s, you were able to follow a low-calorie diet, be a little bit more active, and lose weight. And now that same plan for them is not working. And so that's kind of what brings them in. They're a little bit clueless as to why that plan is no longer working. And so we go into the dietary counseling of how to read a nutrition label, what it means when it says no sugar added. No sugar added does not mean no sugar. There's just no additional sugar that was already added in there. So nutritional education is very important for these patients. And you and I have kind of been talking about low carb. It kind of sounds like low carb is your way of eating also, Bert, but that seems to be the most successful diet for those older patients, or I should say patients over the age of 40.
Right. And that's right. And just, you nailed it. What I started doing is deleting all unnatural carbs. And when I say unnatural carbs, for me, that means that if I have to bake it or mix it, it's not a natural carb. You mentioned bread. Bread is one of those deceptive things. It's one of those great lies that somehow our government bought into it, and so it's part of the food pyramid, you know, that bread is a healthy food. Well, it really isn't. And in today's world, you know, you have people who are eating these massive amounts of bread, or, quote, wheat bread, because it's healthier. And again, that might be great if you're an athlete. If you're a runner and you're running and you're burning a lot of calories, or a swimmer or something, then carbs probably aren't going to matter to you because you're going to burn them. But for us regular folks, man, it really sits on you, and it takes forever to burn those things.
And for the same reason, aside from the weight, is also all the people now that we're finding who have some gluten insensitivity. So they might not have a full-blown gluten allergy, but they are the ones that are suffering from indigestion, constipation, bloating. Doing a very minor change in their diet fixes that problem. So before starting them on any other medication, doing a dietary evaluation is very important for these patients. You had also brought up physical activity for the athletes. You know, for them, the carbs probably does not matter as much. And you brought up
right. Hey, you know what? Let me do this. Let me pause you there for a second. Let me interrupt you. Speaking of activity, I have to press this button, and we have to go to commercial and pay for some of our bills, and we're going to be right back talking about you and your health with medical weight loss expert Charisse Soler right after this quick break.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Rose.
And Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. We're talking about you and your health. What's real? What's hype? With Charisse Soler. And you were starting to say something, and I had to go to commercial. Let's pick that up.
Yeah, my point was going to be that before, you know, our physical activity as a society has changed over time. So before, our grandparents may have been eating toast for breakfast, oatmeal for breakfast, sandwiches for lunch, and maintaining their weight well. You had mentioned how food has changed over time, and the same type of breads and grains are not the same that we are consuming today, but also our physical activity has drastically changed. Nobody walks anymore, you know, to get to the grocery store, or nobody rides their bike, or I shouldn't say nobody, a drastic decrease of people. We all use cars, you know, buses, things of that nature that really drastically affect the amount of calories we burn on a daily basis.
Yeah, and with technology changing the way we work, that's only scaling up. I mean, I bet you that if our grandparents or our great-grandparents looked at our fingers, I bet you all our fingers are slim and thin compared to theirs. Simply because we do a lot of testing and a lot of computer work, right? That's you know, and so I appreciate you laughing at that. But the reality is that's true. That is what technology is doing for us. Today, you and I, in general, we do not have to get up, and we could have, you know, we could order food from our computer. It will be delivered to us. We don't even have to pick up the phone, for heaven's sake. It can be delivered. You know, we don't really have to get up to go do a grocery shopping. You can get about everything delivered to you. So, again, it gives you another motivation not to walk down the street to the grocery store. And when you said that nobody is, obviously you meant that as a generality. And I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us, 95% of our population, aren't walking enough, aren't moving enough. We're not doing anything. And not to be rude, but the population that needs it the most does it the least.
Right, right. And it's a cycle, you know, so it's really one of those things that what we're trying to do is not only educate our patients, but also educate people that are outside the specialty of medical weight loss, primary care physicians especially, because they're kind of the gatekeepers for these patients. So if they are there to ask, open the door for conversation, and see if these patients are ready to discuss weight management and really let them know that there are sources out there for them that can get help.
Right. Let's talk about this real quick. We only have a couple of minutes. I want to talk about this particular. I want to call it the ugly myth, and that is, hey, if I starve myself, I'll lose weight, or if I eat less, I'll lose weight. But we kind of talked about that a little bit, but I want to talk about that a little bit more. Isn't this kind of one of those misinformational type myths out there that it's not about eating less, it's really about eating better or eating right?
Eating better, absolutely. So a lot of patients, there's that stigma, there's that shame, maybe a lack of willpower even as to why they are a little bit heavier. So absolutely, a lot of, would say, more than 50-60% of the people that are overweight, that are obese, can be corrected with a little bit of eating better, eating less, choosing the right foods. But there's also a large percentage of patients who have medical conditions, or maybe it's drugs that they're taking for other medical conditions that they have that are causing them to gain weight or greatly slow down their metabolism. So this is where the medical weight loss part comes in. We assess their medical history and say, is there something, is there a condition that you have, is there medicine that you may be taking that is impeding your progress? And so that is also important to know. Weight and sometimes losing weight is not a matter of willpower for a lot of people.
Right, right. And you know what? There's been this conspiracy theory out there that these giant food manufacturers are putting chemicals in the food to make them more addictive. I don't think that's what they started to do. I don't believe that they're intentionally doing that. I believe
right.
that because they're adding all these chemicals, and some of these chemicals like sugar make it
absolutely
that we become addictive. You know, they put in all this extra sugar, all this extra salt, and before mm-hmm. you know it, yeah, we want more of that. I mean, it's, you know,
right.
we want another Oreo. We want another chip. And
mm-hmm.
it's just, it's hardwired into us. Listen, Therese, we're out of time. I want to say thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. Look forward to having you back another time.
You guys have a day. Thank you, Bert.
All righty. Guys, we're off and running. Great stuff there by Therese Solers. Just interesting stuff about what you can do to maintain your weight without necessarily crash dieting or anything like that. It's really about the junk in the food that's causing us to be overweight, be over fat. I mean, you might even weigh the right amount, but with today's food, it's hard to maintain the fat loss. And up for that, our next guest, Frank Ladreno. Man, I hope I got that right, Frank. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro
and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick. Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we are back. My next guest, Frank Ladreno. Frank is an international tax expert with the firm of Pennell Kerr Foster of Texas. Frank has extensive experience with working Houston-based companies doing business internationally. Let me see if I can read my stuff here. Further, Frank and his team also works with foreign-based companies that are expanding into Texas. Frank's services include international organizational structuring, global tax minimization, transfer pricing, and international tax compliance. Frank Ladreno, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much, Bert, for having me.
All right, we'll just talk about this because, you know, you hear about this all the time that we are now become this global economy and you can do business everywhere. What is a common misconception that U.S. businesses have in expanding their businesses overseas?
Yeah, Bert, most companies, when they start doing business overseas, they do it through exports. They export their products, and Houston, as you probably mentioned on your show many times, is the number one export. Ranks the number one in exports in the country behind, I think, Los Angeles now. And so that's usually how companies start. And normally when exporting companies reach foreign markets, there are no tax implications in those foreign jurisdictions. But as the business starts to grow, U.S.-based companies, Houston-based companies want some sort of a sales person, some kind of sales agent that really takes their business one step further. And so the misconception is whether those independent agents, you know, trigger any income tax issues in those foreign jurisdictions. And if these independent agents work exclusively for a U.S.-based company, then that Houston-based company could have a tax implication in that foreign jurisdiction and may not know it.
Gotcha. Let me ask you this. What export tax incentives still exist in the U.S. for U.S. companies?
Well, the one that's still around that still has a lot of traction thanks to the fiscal cliff deal that made the dividend tax rate equal to the capital gains rate permanent is something called the ICDISC. It's called Interest Charge Domestic International Sales Corporation. And essentially, it's a company that you can set up, an exporting company can set up, and as long as the export products are predominantly made in the U.S. and are exported and consumed outside the U.S., it's a way of converting ordinary income that's taxed at the highest rate of 39.6% into income that's taxed at a relatively lower rate at 23.8%.
Wow. Now, that is a big deal. It's called ICDISC. That's the acronym.
That's the acronym, exactly. And now, it's been around for many years.
Okay, so that one's been around for a while, and in the foreseeable future, you think it'll still be here?
It should be, because politically, if you recall, a couple of years ago, the current administration had said the goal was to double exports in 5 years, and that was the goal set out by the Obama administration. So it would be the administration would be very hard-pressed to take away these tax incentives, because these tax incentives are definitely consistent with the goal of increasing exports.
Right. Okay, so let me ask you this, because I know that for a lot of our listeners who are considering this move, what is the difference, operationally speaking, having a enterprise as a branch versus as a subsidiary company?
Yeah, there are several U.S. tax implications of that, the biggest of which is understanding what you have. It's typically a bit simpler to have a foreign branch operation, which is really just registering your U.S. business in a foreign country, you know, getting the proper approval to do your business in a foreign country. And that's by definition an extension of your U.S. business. And for U.S. tax purposes, that income, although earned outside the U.S., is taxed in your U.S. income tax return. Whereas if you have a foreign subsidiary company, that's a separate legal entity. And if you have a separate legal entity earning foreign income, typically, although there are some exceptions, typically that income is not taxed immediately upon earning that income, but upon repatriating that income in the form of a dividend later on.
I love it. You know what, and when talking about this, the first company that came to mind is Skynet, a.k.a. Google, because I think Google reported last year that they had made like $10 billion overseas or in foreign subsidiary or foreign countries, and we're going to leave them on those foreign soils for now. And it was a massive amount of money. I believe it was $8 or $10 billion, and that's exactly what they did. They left them in those foreign subsidiaries or those foreign companies that they own.
Right, and that's an issue that you know, our lawmakers are addressing, because you know the idea is that if those earnings could be more productively used in the U.S., then why shouldn't it be? And they call that the tax trap or the cash trap, because those foreign earnings are trapped overseas. Because when you bring that, what has been going on for the last 10 years is that the corporate rates around the world have been dropping, while our corporate rates have stayed at a steady 34-35%. And so when you bring those earnings back, you're taxed on the residual or the difference between the U.S. rate and the lower foreign rate. And so there's been a lot of talk by lawmakers of saying we need to lower our corporate rates to something a little bit closer to what we see worldwide, which is about 20 to 28%. And that's been that was a campaign issue, if you recall, with both candidates.
Right. You know, the thing about it is that, my goodness, if we dropped our corporate tax rates to the international levels, man, that might help our economy and help us grow and spur on more business and more trade and all that other good stuff. Man, I don't know if we want that.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think in Houston we don't have an issue with that because we've got a job-creating machine, but I think other parts of the country could benefit from further investment.
Yeah, yeah. No, and absolutely. And for those who didn't catch my sarcasm, I was just having fun at that. Let's talk about this because I have not heard this term. I'm thinking some of our other listeners haven't heard this term. What transfer pricing? Walk me through this.
Yeah, transfer pricing is really intercompany pricing, and this is how certain companies can achieve relatively low tax rates, like a Google that you mentioned. Is so, for example, if I break up the supply chain into different functions, and I have high value functions or functions that create high value, such as R&D functions or manufacturing functions or whatever, and I place those functions in lower tax jurisdictions, then what I do is I can have those tax jurisdictions charge the U.S. company an intercompany price, like for royalties, let's say for IP or for other type of services that they do, and strip out earnings from the U.S., which is a higher tax jurisdiction, and get an overall effective lower worldwide tax rate. And so what transfer pricing is properly assigning a proper third-party charge for transactions that happen between two companies within a corporate group.
Gotcha. You know what? And to me, I see that. I can see that being a massive value to any company, to break it up like that. So that to me makes a lot of sense. Let me ask you this, because we're a little short of time. How is the tax compliance and enforcement environment changing worldwide? Give us your opinion on this.
Well, since the credit crisis, which didn't just affect the U.S. but affected the global economy, as you know, particularly Western Europe, there's been a fight for tax dollars worldwide, and so. In other words, if you are doing some things through transfer pricing, there's this concept that other countries, including the U.S., want their fair share of the tax revenue, and so there's been a much further and stringent oversight and enforcement of the tax laws in different countries because there's this concern that countries in the industrialized world, like the U.S. and Western Europe, may be shifting profits to low cost or low tax jurisdictions, let's say in Asia or lesser developed parts of the world. And so there's a larger scrutiny by tax authorities, not just in the U.S. but worldwide, to examine these intercompany transactions and just foreign transactions in general.
Gotcha. You know what? I find this stuff to be fascinating, and it's interesting too that, again, as you mentioned in the segment just now, that sometimes our crisis affects everybody, and how all these different taxes, can sometimes legally be avoided, but of course our U.S. legislators. Are trying to make it harder and harder, so Google and big companies like Google can't get all the tax breaks they're looking for. Frank, I've enjoyed speaking with you. I want to thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thank you so much, Bert, and it was a pleasure to be with your team today.
All righty. Guys, we're off and running again. Great stuff there by Frank Landro. Oh, I just killed his name. Anyway, from Frank about taxes. My next guest, easier for me to pronounce, Tom Hopkins, right after this. As you guys know, Tom Hopkins is an international sales trainer. His name is synonymous with sales excellence and training right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we are back. Earlier in the show, we were talking about sales, increasing sales, and my next guest does that exactly. He is responsible for affecting literally thousands of companies and millions of people. Tom Hopkins carries the standard. I'd like to take that a little bit further and say created the standard as a master sales trainer and is recognized globally as the world's leading authority on selling techniques and salesmanship. Over 4 million people on 5 continents have attended Tom's high-energy live seminars, 30-plus seminars each year traveling throughout the United States, Canada, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, Malaysia, China, and the Philippines. Tom Hopkins is one of our regular contributors. Welcome, Tom Hopkins.
Well, Bert, nice to hear your excited voice again. How are you?
Man, I'm doing great. It's always exciting to have you on the show. And I'm excited to talk about this because we're going to be talking about the habits of successful salespeople. And I couldn't think of a better person to bring this up than somebody who's literally trained 4 million people through all these seminars that you've done.
Well, it's been a fabulous career. I love teaching. I love seeing people financially grow. And, of course, it's a great way to live, helping other people make a better living. So I've loved it.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I learned from listening to your tapes and then listening later on as they were converted to CDs was, you know, sales is one of the – it's the now I'm going to mess it up. It's one of those careers. How did you say it? Sales is the easiest, hardest way to make money. Oh, help me out with your
sales. Sales is the highest paid hard work and the lowest paid easy work in the world.
That's it. All right, well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this. As with everything, you know, Tom, in life, success doesn't come just from what we do, but it is somewhat based on who we are. Our own personal character traits, experience, Tom, are there some habits that are common in today's top sales pros? Walk me through your thinking.
Well, first, I feel everybody, in a way, is in sales. And so if you take that concept, the people that seem to do best, first of all, they are fanatics about details. They pay fast attention to details. They also are not only very concerned about themselves coming across properly with people, both on the telephone and in person, but they're very positive all the time. One thing about people that are successful, they can have a bad day, week, month. They can have a crisis. They can have a failure. But no one really knows it in the business community because they know they have to be a positive example of success. And they have traits. They're always punctual. They're on time. They follow up with people. And these are the things that I did. And that's, I think, why I built my 8 years in the real estate business that was so successful. And then people have come to hear me because of what I accomplished in the field of sales.
Right, right. You know what? And since you brought this up, I want to talk to this. I want to talk a little bit about this because, you know, I've talked about this before. How you grew your business into a 98% referral business, and you did this fairly quick. I think it took you just 3 years to do this, which is amazing. primarily giving credit to one habit in particular. I want you to share this story with me.
Well, all right. I became a follow-up specialist. And there's a human nature trait I find.
Hey, Tom, adjust. If you can adjust your phone or your mic, because all of a sudden you started to muffle a little bit.
Okay, is that better?
Perfect. Clear as a bell.
Okay, all right. As in many businesses, I find that many people are looking for new business, but they neglect their existing clients and their existing business. And this is human nature, and it's what a lot of salespeople, marketing people do. You know, where's my new client? And the old ones could give them referrals and help them build a business if they were follow-up specialists. So I built a follow-up program, and that's what I really want to share with the folks, that your clients need to hear from you, because there's a lot of truth to the old saying, out of sight, out of mind. And not only that, competitors steal your business if you're not close to your clients. So I tied in my follow-up to all the main dates in a person's life that are important. Meaning, if you were one of my clients, Bert, you'd get a beautiful Thanksgiving letter. Now, I didn't send Christmas cards because everybody else did. So I sent a beautiful Thanksgiving letter that covered the holiday season so you didn't affect anyone's as far as their religious beliefs. And, of course, wishing them a new year. Then, of course, I had a Happy New Year follow-up program. Now, of course, today with email, this is so easy to do, but it has to be done. One challenge you have is you've got to find a very clever, creative way to get them to go to your email. Because one thing that happens is if they're a client of yours, then they're busy and getting the hundreds of emails they can get. A lot of them eliminate a person that might be in the sales or service field. So you got to grab them with creativity. And then, of course, like I I had the anniversary date of when they purchased our product. They would get an anniversary thank you letter, and then or email today. Then, of course, when I would meet a client and get to know them and they would purchase from me, I'd find out a lot of details. I'd find out their anniversary date of marriage. I'd find out their children's names, ages, and their birth dates. And I would send them all their birthday cards. I mean, here's 10-year-old little Bobby who gets a birthday card from Tom Hopkins, and his mom and dad are going, golly, that Tom keeps sending us all these nice things. And then another thing I did, Bert, real quick, is if you had a hobby, I'd find that out. Like, say you loved golf or tennis or bowling. I don't care what it was. I would categorize that in my follow-up, and I would have a periodical article that I would find, and I would send it to you about that sport or hobby. I might do that once a month. And then I had another thing that was called the Chuckle of the Week, where I would research for clean humor, fun jokes. And once a week, and I called it the Chuckle of the Week, I would send this to all my clients saying, I thought you could use some humor this week, and I'll keep sending one a week, and we'll chuckle together and keep our sense of humors, and because happy people are humorous people. So these are the type of things I did that no one else did. And of course, everything is easy to do, but also everything's easy not to do. So, again, the people may be thinking about building a long-term successful business. Be more attentive to keeping in touch with people. You know, have a way of saying at least 6 times a year they're going to get something from me that they enjoy, something that lets them know how much I appreciate them. And that's how you keep people loyal, and that's one of the reasons how I built that business to where 98% were being referred to me after 3 years.
Yeah, see, that to me is a great takeaway for our audience because, first of all, I like what you were doing with the Thanksgiving letter. And you're right. You know what? Very few of anybody sends a Thanksgiving letter. And, again, you're right that come Christmas time, people are over-inundated with all sorts of thank yous and whatever. So it's hard to filter all that out. But with a Thanksgiving letter, you stand out. And you can become, you know, you can talk about being thankful. So if you have a spiritual message, you can thank them for being your client. You can thank them for this. And there's so much you can do with it. And it's generally very neutral, as you mentioned earlier. It doesn't matter what religion or nationality you are. Who doesn't like to receive a thank you and talk about being thankful and all that other stuff? And then I also like the comment about the New Year letter, getting people started off right. You know, you mentioned right there at the end that, you know, as a minimum, you're going to contact people six times a year. That's once every 60 days. That, to me, is a no-brainer. Everybody should be doing that. And you know what? The other thing, Tom, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, is I find that a lot of people who get referral business do this one habit or this one thing, and that is they ask for referrals, right?
Exactly. In fact, I think you can set that up in the very beginning with people. You know, Bert, if you and I were going to do business, I would say, Bert, our company doesn't spend millions of dollars on advertising. We've decided to build it on word-of-mouth recommendations from people that are happy with what we do. So the company's asked me right in the beginning to say, if we do a great job for you and you're thrilled with the job we do, would it be all right if I ask you for a few other folks that might be a quality introduction that I might talk to? And amazing, because you want me to do a good job, Bert, you'll say, well, yeah, you know, make us happy, and sure, we might know some other folks. Now I've prepared you to give me referrals right in the beginning as we start doing business. And then, of course, you know, 3 months later, 1 month later, whatever, I've closed the transaction. And that's when I come back in person with a gift, some type of little gift, doesn't need to be expensive. And then I just say, Bert, you remember 2 months ago when you and I first started developing our business together? I told you that we built our business on word-of-mouth recommendations, and you were gracious to say that if we did a good job, that you'd be willing to maybe refer me to a couple other folks. And, well, let me ask you, are you happy with what I've done? And, of course, if you've done the job, they say, well, yes. Say, well, good. Why don't we think about some of the folks you know? Now, you've got to always start with people close to them. It can start with people working in the same company. That's what we call the fellow associates. It can be people that there are relatives. It can be friends. But you got to open their minds up to see faces. Because if you just say to someone, who else might you know, you're giving them the whole United States to look at. So isolating faces, people to think of. And, of course, I used to always just say, I'd love to just ask you for three. Now they know there's a number. And so you get the first, second, third. And then, of course, you get permission to use their name when you contact them. And this is how you develop a business. I think that selling and marketing, it's not luck, wit, charm. It's strategic ways of doing things.
Right. I love that. Man, you know what, Tom, and all kidding aside, so far this segment is a jewel. It's been awesome. I mean, this is great stuff. Let me ask you this, though. I want to put you on the spot a little bit. Do you have, by chance, could you by chance share with us a time when a little extra attention to detail was the tipping point for you in possibly getting a sale? And then conversely, maybe share a situation where a little detail kept you from closing a sale. Anything come to mind?
Well, one thing that I did that was unique is people would come into an open house, and most people listening know that a real estate agent on a Saturday or Sunday puts flags up and signs up and has an open house. And when people would come to see my open house, I knew they were going to talk to other real estate agents. So if it was a nice hot day, I'd always take with me 2 half gallons of vanilla ice cream. And when they finished looking at the property, I'd say, you know what, next week we'll get together and I'll select some of our finer properties to show you, but I want to give you a little gift to take home. This is a nice ice cream, and I hope you enjoy it. Well, if it's 95 degrees out, Bert, where are you going to go with a half a gallon of ice cream in your car? You're going home. And that's one way I tipped a lot of those sales to me, to get them off the street and not go see another broker.
I love that. That is so friggin' smart. I mean, you know, I like that because what a great point. You got them to not go see another person. They're going to say, thank you for the ice cream, and if they have children, forget it. They must share that answer with the kids immediately. That's all the, you know, that's immediately on everybody's mind. So they're going to go home and do that. And if once they get home, they're probably going to stay.
Yeah, you've got them off the street till you see them next week.
I love it. I love it. All right. So now, my second part of that question, do you remember a time where maybe not keeping details caused you a sale?
Well, yeah, a couple things. I didn't follow up on my details close enough, and I met a client, and I called them by the wrong name. And, of course, this was devastating. You've got to be so careful that you remember people's names today. And I called them the wrong name when I was going to fill out the paperwork. And he looked at me and says, Tom, I mean, my name is not Ronald, it's Jim. And, I mean, I felt like a fool. And, of course, we did business. But I know that I lost a lot of momentum. So I became a fanatic at remembering people's names because it's an important thing that if you don't remember my name, you're a typical salesperson and you don't really care.
Right. And you know what's important to this, too? Forgivable to forget somebody's name, let's say in a fast-paced retail environment. You know, maybe you've only hung out with somebody for 3 or 4 minutes. But if you're in a personal sales environment where you're spending an hour or two with somebody, it is becomes an unforgivable sin, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Tom Hopkins, we're out of time. I want to say thank you so much for stopping by. As always, it's just wonderful to have you on the show. And next time you come on, I know you got a new book coming out. We're going to be talking about your latest book. What is the title of your latest book?
When Buyers Say No. And that's when the whole selling process starts, and I'm so thrilled about the new book. And, of course, you know, anyone that's interested in anything we do can go to my website. But, gosh darn it, Bert, it's always good to visit with you and share ideas and hopefully make other people more successful.
Absolutely, Tom. It's a pleasure. And, guys, check out TomHopkins.com, TomHopkins.com, the book When Buyers Say No. Correct?
Yep.
All righty.
And
you sent me a preview copy of it. I'm excited to read this preview copy that you sent me, and we'll talk about it in detail next time you're on the show.
Super, Bert. All the best, my friend.
All righty. Guys, we're
off
and running. Great stuff there by our regular contributor, good friend Tom Hopkins. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back with Bill Bartman right after this.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew. You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick.
Oh, yeah.
Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys. We are back. My next guest, Bill Bartman. Bill is joining us as we speak. There seemed to be we had a little drop-off there, a little technology snafu, but Bill's joining us as we speak. Let me tell you about my friend Bill Bartman. I think he's one of those guys that makes a difference in the world, certainly makes a difference here in America, because he is what I call a industry disruptor. Bill Bartman, founder of and CEO of CFS2, an aggressive advocate for reform in the debt collection industry, said, "I'm convinced we are on the right track to reforming an industry of rampant abuse, and Governor Henry will play a big role in helping to deliver our message to the regulators and capital sources." Here's what's interesting. Bill Bartman is a debt collector, but he's a sweetheart. He collects debt in the nicest way possible. He's built an industry like that. This is the second time. He became a billionaire doing this. Bill Bartman is a real entrepreneur because he's taken an industry and really turned it upside down. Bill Bartman, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert, how are you? And sorry about the snafu. I think it was on my end. We'll call it technical difficulties.
Well, you know what? The great thing about a live show is that all sorts of things happened. Last week, because of the snowstorms in the East Coast, we were shut down several days. You know, it's just crazy what can happen, but I'm so delighted to have you back on the show, Bill.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that. And I was able to call in and listen to Tom Hopkins, and Tom is just a wonderful friend. He's a mentor. He's a guide. He's someone I've shared the stage with probably 30 or 40 times in the old Get Motivated days. Remember those traveling
yes.
circus shows?
Yeah.
Tom and I would do those together. And it'd be so great to walk into a basketball venue and you have 20 to 22,000 people in the stadium, and you're giving them a presentation or a conversation about what it is you think might be helpful to them. And I always marveled at Tom because he would have a new topic every time, and people would be literally sliding forward in their seats to hear what it is he had to say. And what a master he is.
Well, that is very nice, and I bet you you'll get a thank you note from him on that. Let's talk about this. You have gotten a best-selling book out called Bouncing Back, which is a riveting story. I read this. I forgot how many pages, approximately 300 or 400 or 500 pages. I sat down, read it on a Saturday. It's riveting. It's your life experience going from absolutely broke and kind of in a sort of a somewhat dysfunctional family. I mean, we're all dysfunctional, but kind of an abusive, almost dysfunctional family. A dropout, a high school dropout, to becoming dropping back in, all your different challenges, getting through school and then college and then law school and all this other stuff, and then the amazing climb that you went to from being a billionaire, and then you had some challenges then. My question to you is, how were you able to do all of this and still maintain this demeanor of sincerely, and I mean this with all sincerity, of just a nice guy, of true love and respect for other human beings? How are you not a bitter guy?
Well, I only lost $4.5 billion, so it wasn't that bad. Had it been serious money, Bert, then maybe I would have been upset. No, I'm only joking slightly. It doesn't matter. You know, what you lose. I mean, of course, we can all sit here and say, well, you know, I've been wronged or somebody did me bad or, gee, you know, we all have those kind of stories. And every one of us have a right to be mad and angry and upset and bitter, as you mentioned, about those things that have happened to us. But that won't do us a bit of good. That will waste energy. That will just be stupid time on our part. Yes, we have an absolute right to go do it, and people expect us to go do it, but it's stupid if we do it. And realizing that, I thought, well, why would I spend my time doing that? Why would I be mad? Why would I be upset? Why would I be bitter? Why would I want to fume around and say they took advantage of me or they screwed me or whatever vernacular you'd put it in? Why don't I instead just turn the other direction and go get busy and get back to work and make some more money to make up for what I lost? And that's what I did. And so I don't think it's remarkable or marvelous or wonderful. I think it's common sense.
Yeah, but of course we both know that common sense isn't always common. I think what astonishes me and what astonishes people is this wasn't just a business that went belly up. For instance, when you were in the oil business and the oil market changed, that business went belly up, and people could say, well, you know what, you lost that business because of the market, the conditions in the market, and there's nothing you can do about it. However, in this other business, CFS, the first one, it wasn't that. It was definitely a different environment. I'm not going to give it away. I want everybody to go out to Amazon and get this book. It's called Bouncing Back. It will teach you a lot about business, a lot about humanity, and it's all the proceeds go to charity. The book's called Bouncing Back. But I want to kind of get into the nitty of this. So Bill, again, thanks for joining us. I want you to tell people what CFS2 is all about and the business model behind it, because you've really taken this industry of collecting debt, you've turned it upside down, but you're also using respect and, I'm going to say, sincere caring for your fellow man. So walk me through the business model.
Sure. I'm happy to do that, Bert. And it's, again, so it's common sense, and you're right. Common sense sometimes is pretty rare, but you know, somebody once said, genius, true genius, is discovering the obvious. And all we did was discovered the obvious, and the obvious was that which your mother and everybody's listening on this call's mother said to them at least once: you'll get more with honey than you get with vinegar. Now, that's true universally. Well, we applied that to the debt collection industry and said, okay, then, you know, the vinegar would be yelling and screaming and ranting and raving and pushing people into the muck and beating them into submission and pulling that last nickel out of their pocket, which, by the way, is kind of what the debt collection industry is famous for. We said, well, let's be the other guy. If that's vinegar, let's go be honey. Let's be the opposite of that. Let's go see if mom was right about you get more with honey than you do with vinegar. So we started a test project with 60,000 customers, a relatively small sample, and we said, we're not going to yell, we're not going to scream, we're not going to rant and rave, we're not going to be abusive, we're not going to sue them, we're not going to raise our voice, we're not going to do any of those bad, nasty things. Instead, we're going to start each conversation with, what can I do to help? So, Bert, if you were my customer, if you owed us money and I were your debt collector, I would call you up and say, Bert, what can I do? And you would say, well, Bill, I don't know. What can you do for me? I said, well, Bert, how about if I help you negotiate all of your other debts you have with all of your other creditors? And, Bert, I'll do that for nothing. I will do that free of charge. And you'll say, well, Bill, what's the trick? What's the gimmick? And I would say, there is no trick. There is no gimmick. It's good business. If I can help you resolve all of your other debt obligations, you'll have more wherewithal with which to pay me later. And maybe you won't be able to pay me for 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, or 12 months, but someday later in life, you'll have more money if I can help you, and I expect you might choose to pay me later. And then you would say, sure, Bill, let's start, and I would go ahead and begin that program. But then immediately I would say, Bert, let me help you get a better job. Let me help you improve your employment situation, because maybe, in fact, you're actually unemployed, and if you're not unemployed, you're probably underemployed. And so we write resumes for our customers. We post them on job search sites. We then have our own staff go find job openings that fit that person's resume. We then fill out the application. We schedule the interview. We get that person to practice the interview with us on the telephone and on Skype, and their chances then of succeeding are just extremely higher. And then the third thing we do for nothing for that customer is we say, what else can I do to help you? And they say, well, yeah, I don't know. I need a hot water heater or you know, I have a leaky roof. And you say, really? They would say that? You say, yeah, because they really do have those things. And so we would say, okay, we'll go fix your leaky roof. We'll go give you a free hot water heater. And we do all those things for nothing, knowing that as we do them for people, we are creating another debt of gratitude and that most people are honorable. And here's the result. After 3 years, 60,000 people as an experiment, we are collecting 200% more than any debt collector in history.
Wow. Wow. And this is the part that's so amazing, is that, you know, you look at the debt collection industry in whole, and you're right. I mean, it's rampant with abuse and trickery and deceit. And we've heard people who have been lied to and were threatened with jail. You've gone the complete reverse. Again, you're disrupting the industry by being not only a nice guy. It's one thing to be the nice guy and say, listen, we're not going to, you know, we're going to treat you with respect. You've gone the extra mile, and you've become the good Samaritan to help people really cover or, in some cases, rearrange their life or their debt. So not only are they doing better in life, but now they can pay you and live better. And I'm just amazed at the high level of goodwill that you're developing. I mean, these guys have to look forward to getting a call from your company.
Well, they do, Bert, and that's what's so amazing, because the debt collection model is premised on outbound phone calls, meaning the debt collector has to go find the debtor and get them on the telephone to hopefully do some collection effort energy with. And most debtors are relatively smart, and they know what that number means, and they see the caller ID, and they aren't real eager about picking up that phone to be suffering some self-abuse by a debt collector. So that's the model for the other guy, the vinegar guy. A honey guy, our customers call us. We don't call them. They call in to say, hey, here's what's going on in my life. Here's what I'm doing today. Here's what's important to me. Oh, by the way, I just got a raise or a promotion or my tax refund or something, and I can send you some more money this month than I could last month. They're calling us. We don't call them. Now, how much easier is that, first, on my employees? When they don't have to be mean and nasty, they can be nice and generous. And secondly, when they don't have to make outbound phone calls, they just have to be the inbound receiver. It's phenomenal. Now, you know, members of Congress now, even the President of the United States and others have acknowledged what it is we're doing is not just disrupting the debt collection industry in America. And this is what's so neat, Burton. You don't know about this yet. We are now making an absolute impact on the bankruptcy rate in America. Now you think about that just for a second. You know, X number of people are going to file bankruptcy because they're up to their eyeballs in debt. And bankruptcy
right.
is allowed and permissible for people who can't find a way out. Well, all of a sudden, we're helping people not file bankruptcy by resolving their other debts with their other creditors at a fair rate of exchange to both parties based on the facts. Customers are no longer having to seek bankruptcy. So we're actually reducing the bankruptcy rate in America, and better, we're reducing the unemployment rate in America, and we're stopping the number of lawsuits that get filed in America for debt collection. Now, yes, we're helping our customer one at a time, thousands at a time, but we're also helping the economy. Can you imagine that, a debt collector helping the economy?
You know what I hear? Is not only are you helping the economy, but you're, you know, by helping these people out, helping them with their resumes, helping them avoid bankruptcy, you're raising their self-esteem. And you know as well as anybody out there that if you can raise somebody's self-esteem, you can change their life. You know, it's amazing
Absolutely. To
me, you know, it's amazing to me that you've taken this business that is pawned by so many people, and you have, again, I've said this before, you turned it upside down, and now, again, you're having the highest members of our government, including the president, people like Mother Teresa, who also mentioned you before she passed away, that your model not only works, but that your company is genuinely cares about its, you know, about what it does. And
Bert, it's so interesting to see the impact it actually has on families. And CBS 60 Minutes came and did a segment on us, and the clip is actually on my website, BillBartman.com, and Bartman has two N's in it. So I would encourage people to go look at the CBS Evening News segment. They interviewed one of our customers, and at the end of the interview, the customer eyes well up into tears when she describes her relationship with a debt collection company. And they are tears of joy, not tears of fear. And you go, really? Really? One of your debtors is talking to CBS 60 Minutes and she's saying nice things about how she had been treated over the course of the last year and how she's now completely out of debt? and how she's now, you know, back working and making a living and taking care of her family. Yeah, I mean, go see that video, and it will amaze you. And then put six zeros behind it, because we're going to do that for a million people, not just one person.
You know what? I'm going to encourage everybody to go see it. It's Bill Bartman, BARTMANN.com, BillBartman.com. Check him out. Check out his book as well. Bill, it's always good to have you on the show. I love what you're doing. It's absolutely one of those things. It's a fairy tale story come to life, because, again, you're disrupting the industry. I've said that numerous times. You're helping people pull themselves up, which is what America is all about. You know, a lot of us don't want a hand out. We want a hand up. Just help me out a little bit. Let me just catch my breath. Let me just get a better job instead of working two crappy jobs where I can't pay my bills. And all of a sudden, you know, that's what you're doing. You know, it's amazing to me. And we're going to have to find a different category to put you in, because really you're no longer a debt collector. You're more like a, I don't know, I'm speechless. I feel like what you're doing, but it's no longer a debt collector. It's more like...
Well, when you find out what it is we are, please call me and let me know so I can raise my hand appropriately.
I love it. Bill Bartman, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. Looking forward to having you back again soon.
Thanks, Bert. Have a great day, buddy. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye. Guys, we're off and running. Great stuff there by Bill Bartman. Always, always a pleasure. And what's amazing about this is that he built a multi-billion-dollar enterprise on this, employed thousands of people. You guys can make a difference when you don't compromise your values. As always, we appreciate you here on Money for Lunch. Go out and have fun. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo! Geico. Because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.